Welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, a show dedicated to the artistry and science of sports field management and celebrating the groundskeepers who create those masterpieces. The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 67 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. On this edition of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, we're talking World Series. We're very fortunate today to be able to get both Bill Deacon with the New York Mets and Trevor Vance with the Kansas City Royals to do an interview with us.
It's going to be like WWE, baby. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
No, I don't think so, Teresa. First of all, this is not a cage match between Trevor and Bill. They're not actually fighting each other or playing against each other.
That's true.
And secondly, we're going to be talking to them separately, so it's not going to be any kind of this head-on type stuff.
You're no fun. No, seriously. Coming at it from, you know, my husband being a groundskeeper type of perspective, it's kind of good that there isn't a rivalry between the groundskeepers, just the teams. Make those turf meetings kind of awkward.
if there was, I'd be putting my money on Trevor. We'll have all that and more coming up on the Diamond Vinci's podcast. All right. Good day, everybody.
and welcome to
another edition of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast. I'm Paul Zawaska, your troubled host, and with me is my talented co-host and producer, Teresa Beyer. Teresa?
I'm just going to sit here and chuckle.
I figured you would. Well, you know, when I was hired in Baltimore in 85, Pat Sanhorn used to say we're the winningest team in baseball. And back then, they were. The Orioles were a dynasty in the 60s, 70s, well, later 60s, and the 70s and the early 80s. And so when Pat hired me, they were the winningest team in baseball. And then I came on. And the years Pat constantly said that I bought the Cubs losing to the Orioles because he knew I was a big Cubs fan, of course. And my dreams of being in the playoffs every couple of years or every year like it was for Pat went right down the tubes. I went from that kind of hope in the first year that by 1988 we started the season 0-21. And there's nothing worse than that. You know, I remember counting down to the end of the season in April after that.
Oh, my gosh.
With my ground crew, because it used to be, it wouldn't be till after the All-Star break that you'd start saying, well, there's only 21 home games left. Well, we were doing that by the end of April. But finally.
You and Larry finally, both.
Yeah, finally in 96 we got into the playoffs. And we only got in twice the whole time I was there in 96 and 97. Mm. But, you know, it's an interesting thing when as a groundskeeper, you kind of approach your job during the regular season one way. You know, it's, you know, because everybody's got their ideas of how the field should be kept and many of us have the thing of, well, you know, we're going to put a fair field out there and let the teams duke it out. And you really don't change the diamond much, even though they might ask or you know, you kind of weigh what they ask for and say, okay, yeah, I can do that. I don't think we need to be doing that every time this team comes into town or that kind of stuff.
Is that worth my time? Is that worth your time? Yeah. Do you really know what you're talking about when you ask for that?
Now, TV announcers love to talk that that's the way we actually do things, but in most cases, we really don't, at least not these days. I do think it happened more in the old days, but not as much now. But when the time comes and you get into the playoffs and money's riding on it, not just for the players, but for the ground crew, you know, because we get a little chunk of change usually in the playoff share, in the World Series shares, well, in the playoffs too. If you get into the playoffs, you know, typically
if
the ground
crew votes for a share for you.
Yeah, typically the ground crew gets voted some type of a share. It might not be a full share, might be a partial share, whatever, and it's split up amongst the ground crew and the head groundskeeper and stuff. You know, when money comes into play, suddenly, what do you need? We'll do whatever you need.
Well, you know, at least that's the way it was then. We don't want to cast any aspersions for now.
This is true. You know, everybody's different, but I know, and speaking with lots of the guys that I knew during the days I was in there, you know, that's the way it was. Now, in 96, we had Mike Mussina, our fireballer, fastball pitcher with us, and we had Scotty Erickson, who was a sinker ball pitcher.
I remember Messina.
Yeah, and Scotty was liked his mound very flat, and Mike liked his mound very steep.
Makes sense.
And so,
wouldn't a sinker want a taller mound? I gotta think through the physics on that one. Go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
You can think through the physics, but again, remember,
we're
dealing with pitchers here. So Scotty wanted the mound flat, and Mike wanted pitched pretty steep. So we would actually go in there at night after the games, when in the cloak of darkness, after the press was gone, and you know, all that kind of stuff. We would change the slope of the mound. Now, you know, you did in those days get checked by Major League Baseball. They would come out once before the playoffs started, and that was the only time they visited us back then. And I think it's much more frequent now.
Yeah.
And the guy
of those stunts you guys used to pull.
The best part was the guy they sent out to check us didn't even know how to check a mound. So they go, how do you guys normally do it? So my assistant Rodney and I went out there, you know, and he goes, well, go get whatever equipment you need to do this, and then explain to me how you do it. I said, so we go up into the shop, and the guy stayed down at the mound, and I said, Rodney, just watch me and do exactly what I'm doing. I said, because we knew we were illegal. I said, well, you know, we'll get through this. Don't worry about it. And, you know, we were able to pull the wool over the eyes of the guy at the time, because the normal guy, Fred Buck, at the time, who used to do all the measuring, was doing some of the other ballparks who were in the playoffs.
Ah.
So we got some rookie from New York.
Outstanding.
And
he went to the next park, and they said, what are you doing?
But that's what we had to do. We were changing back and forth the mound. When Scotty would pitch, we'd flatten it out. And then when Mike would pitch, we'd go back in and put the slope in and make it steeper. We didn't raise or lower the rubber. We were actually just changing the slope on the front of the mound.
Yep.
But those are the kind of things that sometimes groundskeepers might think about doing for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a good chunk of change.
I'm not saying that
it's
happens, but I'm saying this is almost 20 years ago now, folks. This is water way under the bridge, so I can confidently feel that I can release these things. We didn't win the crown, so nobody can come back and take it from us because we were illegal. But you know, you never know what a groundskeeper is going to resort to, and who knows? Maybe we'll find out some of that sneaky information today. I kind of doubt we will.
That.
But let's take a break here, and when we come back, we'll speak to our first guest. Well, our first out-of-the-park interview this morning is with Bill Deacon. Bill started his MLB career with an internship with the Dodgers while studying at Penn State. He started with the Mets in 2006, which is when they last had the opportunity for postseason play. So let's bring in Bill this morning. Bill, welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be with you guys.
So in 2006, you started with the Mets, and at that time, you were still playing in Shea Stadium, obviously, correct?
Yes. That was when we first started the design for the new stadium, but we still had a couple of years left at Shea. Mm.
So can you talk about the differences of working at Shea versus, you know, the new ballpark that you have now with the nice sand-based field? What was Shea like to deal with while you were there during your internship? Or actually, I'm sorry, after your internship when you started working for the Mets in 2006?
Shea, the biggest difference between Shea and Citi Field was that, you know, we actually had a sand-based field at Shea. It had been redone in 2002. The field was in decent shape. We amended the infield dirt when I first got there. That was probably the first thing that we did. The biggest difference was just all the amenities. We didn't have an equipment shop. You know, we worked on equipment outside. We had a little tiny storage room. So those type of amenities, we had a small break room. You know, those were really the big differences. The field itself was a little strange in that we're built on a swamp here. So the field had, you know, these little, the bullpens were probably 6 inches above the actual playing surface because they were on a piece of the stadium that was pile supported while the playing surface wasn't. So you ramped down into the field, which was kind of strange. But Shea was very neat. It had its strange little quirks, but I enjoyed being there. But the amenities are definitely much nicer. You know, we have an equipment lift, and everything's really first class.
Well, and that's the way old ballparks were, you know, because I remember, of course, my years at Memorial Stadium before we moved to Oriole Park. You know, those stadiums that were built back in the 50s and well, even the 60s and 70s, but anything before, you know, the recent round of stadiums, in most cases, the groundskeepers really weren't considered when they built those facilities. And, you know, they'd build the ballpark and, you know, then after it was after they'd gotten it built, they'd go, okay, so let's see, where are we going to stick the ground crew? I mean, because we were stuck in Memorial Stadium. We were stuck in this little tiny hole in the left field corner with, I mean, the amenities were archaic, and that's being pleasant. And I'm sure it was the same way at Shea.
Yeah, that was one of the things I talked to Pete Flynn about when they built the stadium, and that was exactly what he said, was that when Shea opened, they really didn't have anywhere to put the grounds crew. So they, you know, we had a little covered section in left field. We had an area behind home plate. We had all of our materials were stored outside. So it was definitely a lot of tarps covering stuff up, and it was definitely a little more difficult to work.
And so now at the Citi Field, of course, the big change, that, like you say, is the amenities. You know, you've got a pretty swanky groundskeeping area there now?
Definitely. Very nice. You know, we have a great equipment shop. We've got indoor bins, nice lounge for the guys, and, you know, adequate storage. Everything sits inside except for, you know, our BP stuff. But other than that, everything we can store everything inside, so that's great.
Do you have a window in your office to the field?
You know what? I had a window, and when we moved the fences in the first time, I lost my window.
Really? Oh, that is a slap in the face. I mean, who needs, you know, when we were designing Oriole Park, that was the big argument with the architects is, who needs to see the field more than anybody but the groundskeeper?
Right? I don't know why that's not standard.
I still to this day don't understand why that's not standard. I mean, each of those guys should have
It was great having the window.
Yeah.
And when we decided to move the fences in, that was one of the things I mentioned to when they were looking at it. I said, can you guys please not pull the fence in right there? And they said, well, unfortunately, that's the main area where we actually need to pull the fence in. So
then your answer should have been, well, okay, well, then just expand my office.
I'm lucky that when I lost my window, they hooked me up with some cameras so that I could see the field.
Oh, that's nice.
That's better than nothing, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
So now when you came in 2006, they went into the playoffs that year, correct?
Yes.
And so what was the difference in setting up for the playoffs there at Shea back at that period and versus what you've had to do for this round of playoffs this year?
I think the biggest thing that, I mean, it's been 9 years, but I think it's just become a bigger production from what I've noticed. You know, it was my first year as a major league head groundskeeper. And, you know, we got to the playoffs and I was just looking at the guys going, wow, this is great. And I thought it was going to happen every year, I guess, like everyone else thinks. And then it's been a long time. So we kind of breezed through it and I think I'm enjoying it a lot more this time from a personal standpoint, but I think just the television broadcasts and everything that goes along with it now, it's become such a huge event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not as big as the All-Star game on the All-Star week, but certainly it's a big deal. And actually, it's a good thing that it isn't as big as the All-Star game because, you know, these are way more important games than the All-Star game is. And you don't really want the three-ring circus going on the field like they do at the Super Bowl. And they can't really do that anyways because they don't know to the last minute who's playing it. You know, so it's not like the Super Bowl, which is played at a neutral site and set up, you know, a couple of years in advance. in baseball, you just don't have that advanced preparation. So that's a good thing from a groundskeeper's standpoint.
Yes, definitely.
Now, during the baseball season, are you dealing with a lot of the groundskeepers with a lot of non-baseball events on your field?
Yeah, we have probably close to, I would say, in the 60 to 70 range.
Wow.
This year we did two big concerts. We had the Foo Fighters here for 2 days and Zac Brown here for 2 days. And then we do a lot of softball games, batting practices. The standard stuff for post-game, you know, kids run the bases, all those things that seem to be becoming the norm.
Yeah.
And then this year we didn't have any soccer games or anything like that, but we had the two big concerts. And then as soon as the World Series is over, we're converting the field to cricket and having a cricket match here on November 7th.
You mean the game that never ends? It's kind of like Candyland, you know? Those games can sometimes go on for days, I hate to tell you.
Yeah, they I don't fully understand cricket, but they said they put a time limit on it. It's a 3-hour time limit, so that'll be good.
I tried to watch it once, and I couldn't make hide nor hair sense of the game, to be honest with you. I mean, I stood there. They actually have a cricket league here in Madison that's played on Sundays at one of the parks in Madison, and I accidentally fell upon it back several years ago, and I was getting ready to have a little league team practice and realized we couldn't play there because cricket was being played at the time, and so I had to stick around and tell the parents to move to another park as they arrived, and I'd be waiting for cars to come. I'd turn around to try and watch this cricket game and go, I can't make sense of this game, but I do know that these games can last a long time. So which would you rank? Now, you've hosted an All-Star game there, correct?
Yes.
So between a concert, an All-Star game, and playoffs and World Series, which is the hardest to deal with?
It's the All-Star game was one of the most difficult things. It was planned, but it seemed like we were constantly changing things. Concert-wise, so much depends on the promoter. This year we had very good promoters and we had very good stage and flooring crews. So the concerts went quite smoothly. But if you end up with a promoter who is very stubborn and insists on doing things that aren't field friendly, then obviously the concert's going to be the most difficult.
Yeah.
The good thing, like you said, about the World Series is things happen so fast that you don't really,
it's really just another game day.
Yes. Yeah. It's slightly larger in the back of house, but it's really like another game day. And for us, we don't have any events between the NLCS aside from the workouts. So we're really able to just concentrate on baseball and get the field to play the way we want to.
Nice.
And not only that, it allows you to enjoy it and take it in more than if you were so worried about all the other extra events that might go along with like an All-Star game or whatnot. So
it
does allow you to really take it in.
I mean, so would you say that you can actually do more pure groundskeeping in between the NLCS and the series than you're able to do during the rest of the season?
Yes, I would say that.
That's
we
nice.
Have more days to take care of the field.
Yeah.
Well, and you're getting late into the year, so there's not as many extra events. You're past the regular season, so there probably isn't a lot of extra curricular activities normally on that field anyways.
Well, and that actually, speaking of being so late in the season, is that changing some of the stuff that, I mean, this is the latest that the series has started. I mean, is that changing how you're approaching what needs to get done on the field? Do you have stuff that you didn't plan on having to do that you're having to take into consideration?
Yeah, definitely. I think the two biggest changes really are the moisture in the infield dirt. You know, we don't have the sun right now. So we're just, you know, babying it and being very careful. We've kept, essentially, from the end of the season through now, we've just been spoon feeding it water, and when we know we have 2 or 3 days, we'll give it a good soaking. But we're just keeping it constantly wet, and then just the shade issues. Right now, we have no sun between the mound and home plate, all the way around home plate and a lot of the sidelines. So we've been putting growth blankets out in wear areas, and you know, a few little things like that. We're actually today we've got the field tarp on, so we're turning the sub-air heat on just to try and get a little heat underneath the tarp and keep the grass growing.
Nice.
I had a question about what he was doing there. Oh, yeah, it's what I was going to say was, you know, it's not hard to screw up an infield this time of year with water. I mean, you like you say, you have to really be gentle with the water because the water is constantly coming up as we're getting into these colder evenings up here in the north. And you're absolutely right. You got to be you're walking on pins and needles to make sure you don't overapply.
Yeah.
So
that's.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, I was just going to say that's definitely the case.
So between the last game of the NLCS and your first game for the World Series, which comes up here in a day or two, have you guys had to do anything, you know, anything major besides paint the logo?
You know what? We had a couple workouts here. So really, other than painting the logo, we kept our same mowing pattern through the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So other than painting the logo, you know, we gave it a little bit of a little quick release fertilizer to try and give it a little boost.
Sure, sure.
A little nitrate. And then other than that, you know, we've done our regular stuff. Yesterday we edged the infield, we edged the warning track, you know, we gave the dirt a little bit of water. And then you know, it really gives us time to make sure the mounds are perfect. They get checked before every time Double. The team comes into town. So you know, today we'll finish the bullpens up, and then on Friday the Major League Baseball will come in and check them again.
How many you got on your regular staff right now?
Right now we have, including myself, there's six of us on the full-time okay. staff.
Yep.
And then, you know, we have up to 22 part-time guys, game staff.
Yep. I see. Well, we certainly wish you the best of luck in your World Series here this next week, over the next week or so. And, whoever wins, I'm not gonna say who I favor. You know, you guys you've been in the playoffs, you know, fairly recently in 2006. Your last World Series win was it 2000? Was it?
They were in the World Series in 2086. So was the last World Series.
Oh, 86. So they were talking. Okay.
Yeah, last night the Royals were 85 and we were 86. So.
Okay. So they're the longer suffering team right now. by a hair. Well, again, the best of luck to you, and we really appreciate you, Bill, taking time out of the busy time that you've got watching it rain out there.
Paul.
Waiting for the games to start, because, you know, you guys are probably playing cards today in there, but keep up the great work, and we'll all be watching your handiwork during the World Series. And thanks a lot, Bill.
Thanks.
Thank you guys for having me.
For all of you Diamond Da Vinci's out there looking to extend your budget dollars as best you can, make sure you check out the open box section of the Beacon Athletics website. There you'll find items that have been discontinued in our product lineup, returned lightly used items, blemished product, or product we've used for demonstration. All products are new or slightly used and in great working order and are sold as is. These items can be yours at substantial savings, but there are limited quantities, so act fast when you see something you want. If you wait, the product may be gone. Products can be added at any time, so check the site often. Just go to www.beaconathletics.com and click on Open Box on the green toolbar at the top of our homepage. These hot smoking deals are too good to pass up. So our second half of the Out of the Park interview is going to be here with Trevor Vance. Trevor's been with the Royals for the past 30 to 31 years, roughly, and has been the head groundskeeper after he took over for George Toma in 1995. This is his second trip to the series in as many years. So let's welcome to Diamond Vinci's podcast, Trevor Vance. Trevor, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you taking time. I know it's a little busy for you. You had a long night. Last night was the first night of the series. And for those who are listening to the podcast now, they already know that that was the longest, the longest first game of the World Series ever played? Is that correct?
I think that's what they said last night. Regardless, yeah. It was a long night.
Yeah.
What does your sleep meter say?
sleep meter was, I got in bed at 2 and got up with the dogs at 6:45. So,
oh.
Yeah. So this time of the year, you're just running on adrenaline.
Yeah.
When this thing's all over with, we'll probably all crash hard. So right now we're trying to enjoy it and do whatever we can to make this place beautiful.
Well, I couldn't be more thrilled for you last year, first of all, because I know how long-suffering Kansas City had been in a drought for making the playoffs. And it was great to see you in the playoffs. Unfortunately, you came off short, but so thrilling to see that you got back into it this year. Are you approaching it differently? Are you taking more of it in this time and enjoying it a little bit more, do you think, than the last time?
Well, that's always our goal is, you know, I tell my assistants and my crew to, you know, take a deep breath and enjoy what you can. You know, unfortunately, game one, we had rain all day yesterday, so there wasn't much enjoyment with that. but at the end of the day, we got the W, and that makes everything worthwhile. But, you know, this year is a little different. I mean, you've all been to big sporting events. The media is just incredible. And now you're playing a team from New York. I mean, it is unbelievable how much media is are at these ball games.
Wow.
Yeah. It's certainly a big difference from doing an all-star game. You don't have all the gala and extra events that go with it. It's kind of a business as usual, as we were talking about with Bill Deacon earlier. You know, it's from that standpoint, it's just kind of a normal game day for you. The only difference is, like you say, you've got a lot more media, and there's a lot more media focus on the whole thing, right?
Well, yeah, and I'll add this, too. This is Major League Baseball's event.
Yeah.
They make all the decisions. Yesterday, they determined there'd be no BP, which takes a lot of pressure off the ground crew, because, you know, if your team wants to hit and you really don't want them out there, how do you tell them no? This way, MLB comes in and says, due to the field conditions, there'll be no BP, and nobody can get upset with us. So it does take a lot of pressure off of us. Although you're playing in a much bigger game than, say, August or July, there's a lot of people that get involved in decision-making, and I'm okay with that because I don't have to make those decisions now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was going to ask you about that. In the minor leagues, I've been in single and triple A. Kansas is well known for always taking BP. Which is, you know, is there right? And it's part of the strategy. But so your guys weren't allowed to take BP yesterday. Are they taking it today? How did they take that? I mean, I was going to ask if they were taking BP in the postseason.
You know, I haven't heard from them yet. Everybody got out of here really late. Part of me thinks they still will not take it today because they might want to rest.
Oh.
Yeah, because it was so late last night.
Other part of me says, you know, once the media shows up and the lights go on, everybody wants to be out there, and it's an exciting time. So,
interesting.
Our weather's good for throughout the day, so we're ready. Actually, we came in today, everything was dried up, and we're ready to get right after it. So,
beautiful.
We're ahead of schedule, and if they want it, we'll be happy to provide it.
So, let me get this straight. So, you were talking about MLB making all the decisions. Do they at least ask for your input before they make the decision?
Oh, absolutely. Yesterday, there was a meeting scheduled. I think it was 5:00. I walked into the room. It was the commissioner, Joe Torre, myself, and a couple other people from MLB. and they wanted my input and feedback on the forecast and field conditions. So,
wow,
absolutely.
That's
and
cool.
We've had a, we've always had, and hopefully we'll always continue to have a great working relationship with the umpires. They trust our forecasts, and so yeah, we still play a vital part, but obviously if it comes to cancellations or sure. postponements, that's they coming take, from
yeah,
MLB.
That's nice. They take all the responsibility. That's good. That's good.
Well, so with the rain that you guys had, I hope you don't mind me asking about this. I hear you have a different tarp strategy than a lot of the other MLB teams. You're in a highly humid zone. You get a lot of rain threats because you're also in Tornado Alley. And so you don't always put the tarp out when you got a 60% chance of rain overnight. You know, I was just curious if your strategy on that changes in the postseason, or, you know, if you can be a little bit less careful because you're not as worried about disease because it's cooler, or if you guys are kind of running the same tarp strategy on that, out of curiosity.
Well, we don't run the exact same tarp strategy because here's the great thing. I'm going to replace my infield and sidelines when this is over anyway. So
bonus.
So with having the tarp on, there's not that big of a deal. And part of the I have to replace my sidelines because the logo is 46 feet long.
Yeah.
Okay, by the time you paint that a couple times, it's not. It'll still be their opening day because of the shade lines this stadium provides, and our growing season. I mean, what are we? 3 days from November?
Yeah.
We've just about expired our growing season, especially in the shade areas.
You got Bermuda, so, right?
Well, we have Bermuda on the infield, overseeded with ryegrass right now. And I'll tell you this: you want the team to clinch at home, unless you're the groundskeeper, because every celebration is on that infield. And all that young ryegrass you have out there just gets beaten up.
Mm. What is your overseeding strategy? Do you go heavy or do you go light?
Well, that's part of the learning curve I found last year. You know, last year I was going, okay, we'll go light. And we ended up having to overseed it, I think, four different times last year.
Mm-hmm.
So this year I came in and went extremely heavy from the beginning. And that proved to be much more successful. Giving us a more dense ryegrass out there, but we're still going to have to replace that infield because the Bermuda it's not going to make it back. I mean,
no.
The ryegrass is in such a young state. I mean, if I knew we weren't going to catch a freeze early on or something, we might try to keep it, but we'll just replace it all once the series is over, and we'll come back with all cool season grass and. We'll look to put the Bermuda back in the infield again next June.
There you go.
So it sounds like you haven't changed your strategy much since I was in baseball, because I remember you and I having many phone conversations about all of this, and then you started doing this. So you're still you do Bermuda only on the infield, and then the rest of your field is cool season grass. And do you still start each year with a bluegrass infield and then tear it out and put Bermuda partway through, or?
The last 2 years I've had last year and this year I'll have to tear it out. But back in that drought you were talking about, that when we were without baseball, that was 29 years, by the way, without playoffs. we were able to establish our cool season grass in the infield, and we didn't have to replace it in the fall, but I can't come back with Bermuda now, so I got to come back with a cool season. I'm not real worried about the quality. You know, give me a good bluegrass that'll get me to June, and as we all know, you know, bluegrass loves cool season. It'll thrive in March, April, May, and then it's coming out in June.
Yeah,
sure.
So I'm more concerned about getting quality Bermuda in June than I am about. You know, I don't need the best on the market for 3 months in the spring.
Right. So what Bermuda are you using there, Trevor?
We're going with Latitude.
Oh, okay.
We've tried them all. We've had Bermuda from West Coast Turf brought in. We even had 2 seasons with Pospolum, which was really, it worked well.
Beautiful, too.
Then, I mean, just the freight and the cost of shipping that sod from the West Coast
Yeah.
We tried to find something more local, and we've been able to find sod. There's actually a sod farm in the Boot Hill in Missouri. And then the last 2 years, we've gotten our sod from out of Tulsa, which is, you know, just a 5-hour ride out here. So,
oh, that's great.
We've done Northbridge. Last 2 years, we've done Latitude. And, I mean, the players absolutely love it. We maintain it at 5/8. It is a carpet, a pool table that the players just, I mean, they rave about. So it's a little investment, but in this game, that little investment is well worth it for the players to be happy.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Our goal is to always have an infield that's thriving throughout the entire season. Paul, you know, in Baltimore, you tarp that thing a few times, that you can set your bluegrass back a little bit. And every year we have more and more events on this field. So why not use a grass that's thriving and can recover, and you don't have to worry about. This year we never sodded once in front of our mound, whether it's cool season or warm season. So we kind of got a grip on it, and it's worked well for us. You know, sodding has become a pretty simple procedure with the equipment people have now. So it's just a no-brainer. We'll strip them one day, sod it the next day. But we usually give ourselves about a week to let it root down and knit in, and we're in good shape.
So for the playoffs and the World Series, is there anything you've done differently to the field? Is there anything, you know, in my intro to the show, I was talking about back in 96 and 97 where there was a little hanky-panky we played with the mound during the playoffs. You know, are you willing to fess up to any hanky-panky going on there, Trevor?
I would be happy to confess up to hanky-panky.
This is not going to air until after the series is over, by the way.
You're not going to believe me, but we have no hanky-panky.
I do believe you.
You know, they come out and check us all the time now with, you know, once you make the playoffs, I mean, they're in town before every game. They check you. They check your bases. They check your slope.
Yep.
They don't care about the home team's bullpen, but
it was funny.
In last year's World Series, everybody thought when we went to San Fran that Greg Elliott purposely soaked his dirt.
Yeah.
Well, and then when San Fran came back here, they thought we wet our grass down to give them troubles. But it's just, you know, the climate.
Yeah.
Our dew, exactly. The dew rises here.
At this time of the year,
7, 8 o'clock. Here it comes, and our outfield can get a little bit slick.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably, I would imagine, at sea level or maybe below. His dirt stays wet.
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially if he gets the right thing coming in off the water. Yep.
Exactly. So we don't. I found out a long time ago, you know, we've had coaches in the past that say, hey, do this, do that. But, you know, the advantage you're giving your team, you're also giving the other team.
That's correct.
So,
we go out there and believe
it or not, we just play by the rules.
And that's the difference, Trevor, of back when I was in the game and now, that they have tightened down on the inspections during playoffs. You know, back when we were in 96, 97, we were only inspected once. And we went back then we were still doing the division series. So we had the division series and the ALCS. We were only inspected once in that whole period. So that's the difference now, is there much more inspections. And normally I never did that obviously during the regular season, but it was a special request made by the club. We had a couple pitchers that were completely different. Very effective, and one liked it flat, and one liked it pitched, and so we gladly gave into it. It meant doing some things in the cloak of darkness, but it got done. But that's 20 years ago, and I can admit that now.
Well, and I'm not saying we've never cheated out here either, but you're right. Things are just—it's not worth it. Right now,
exactly.
I mean, you want that to be the storyline? No.
No, you want the players to be the storyline and the team.
Exactly. And that's how I approach everything, with whether it's what we're doing with the field, via the patterns or whatever. You know, I want that field to have a wow factor, and then I want it to be like a good umpire that's never heard of again.
Good. I like the way you put that.
How long did it take? How long does it take to put the crown in the outfield, Trevor?
By the time we get out there and start laying it out, it's about a 5-hour project the first time. Just because we go to, you know, everybody thinks we got this big, huge template we lay out there.
Yeah.
We have a template for the stars, and the rest of it is rope and sod stakes and a couple guys in the upper deck.
Yeah,
telling
just
them this,
kind of eyeing
this
it out.
A little
yeah.
More. Yeah, I mean, I wish there was a real quick, easy way to do it, but it's just, you know, no, that rope's got to move a little more. We got to straighten that out. And my assistants, Shane Montgomery and Evan Fowler, I mean, they're the bomb when it comes to that, because I'm getting old, my back hurts, I don't want to run around and put 1,000 sod staples in. I'm usually the one in the upper deck, and they're usually the ones
with
out
a beer?
There.
With a beer?
Yeah. Yeah, I wish. They're the ones
I was
out
wondering why that
out.
Crown was a little askew this year.
Yeah, there you have it. There you have it. It was right after we clinched Game 6 of the ALCS. So.
Well, you said you're getting a lot of, a lot more events during the season. You know, is it kind of nice? You know, we were talking to Bill about this too. You know, with versus the All Star Game and the World Series, they're both run by the same group out of MLB, but there's a lot less hubbub going on around the series. And so, did you get some good time to really do some good, honest to goodness groundskeeping in between the playoff series and the series itself?
Last year we did when we swept Anaheim and we swept Baltimore. We had a lot of time. We were able to go in there and do some aerification and get some fertilization down. I mean, it was this year we clinched at midnight on Friday night and we had workouts, you know, at 2:00 on Sunday.
Oh.
So we had to get logos painted. We had to get pattern in. So we've really just continued our maintenance from the ALCS into the World Series.
Well, hopefully all that extra work pays off for you, Trevor. I wish you nothing but the best, and I hope like hell that you get what you tried for last year and didn't reach, and you're able to finally get that ring that we all covet. Unfortunately, I never got the chance to have that pleasure, and I really hope you do, and I wish you and your crew the best of luck the rest of the series here, and glad to hear the weather's cleared out for you, and hopefully by the time this show airs, everybody will know who the rightful winner was.
You probably told Bill the same thing, didn't you?
No, I didn't, actually.
No, you didn't. Paul's busted.
Well, I'll tell you what, there couldn't
be
a better
ground. Does it make sound like, I don't know.
I'm so happy Bill's in it. He's a great guy. I love him like a brother. And actually, I'm flying up there tomorrow to go to 3 games.
Nice.
So I'm gonna get a chance to see Billy. And I'm sure he's going to throw out a product that just blows New York away.
Well, very good. Again, just the best of luck, and have a great time with it.
Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it, T. I mean, the two most prominent groundskeepers right now in Major League Baseball as far as the season is concerned. We've broken it down to Trevor and Bill.
And nobody talked any smack.
They're the guys left working at the end of the year. So even though I said, I think earlier in the show, that I didn't want to show my favoritism to them.
You kind of did.
I think I kind of did. But let's just let the folks know who we're cheering for. So who are you cheering for? Actually, let me ask you this. Who are you cheering for? And then who is Larry cheering for?
House? We are a divided house. Larry and Bill go way back. They worked together a long time ago back at the Dodgers and have remained, you know, good friends since. Bill has pugs. We have a pug.
this is a pug based.
This is a pug based. Yeah, yes. Relationship apparently between the two of them, and so he is definitely rooting for the Mets. And back when I was in the minors, single and triple A, the Kansas team was always a class act team. They were the biggest pains in the butt because they always wanted to take stupid BP no matter what the stupid weather was. They always wanted infield. They took any time that they could get out on that field, which actually I respected, you know, as much as a groundskeeper, I was like, ugh, you guys, I'm so tired, you know, like, just let me have some lunch. I respected that. I respected their work ethic. And then on top of that, they were the best because they also were the most, they showed the most gratitude for what we did out there. Which is not that we do it to be thanked, but when an extra case of beer shows up at the end of the night, it's kind of nice. Not every time, but once in a while. Or, you know, if for some reason Domino's shows up with about 10 pizzas for you and the crew, you know, it's kind of nice. So,
a ground crew lives on its stomach.
Heck yeah.
That's the bottom line. We're just like an army.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I got to admit, you know, although I take my husband's side, I'm kind of rooting for Kansas.
Well, apparently I showed my colors there at the end of Trevor's interview. Trevor and I, of course, go way back when he took over for George, and Trevor and I used to talk a lot on the phone about what things were working for us because we're both in the transition zone.
And real humid areas.
And so Trevor and I became pretty good friends, and I was so thrilled last year when he finally made it into the playoffs. And I felt bad that he didn't win it, so I'm hoping this year that he's able to finally get that ring. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. He's, you know, I call him the bear because he's got a hand that's the size of a bear's paw and a grip like nobody I know. Yeah, this guy will just crush your hand. So I'm really hoping for Trevor to pull it off. Nothing against Bill. I love Bill. He's a great guy and a great groundskeeper, but I've just known Trevor for such a long time. And I just like to see him finally get, especially cause he's a small market team. Yeah. And small market teams, typically they get trounced on by the big market teams.
Yeah.
So I that's my thing. So that's what we're hoping for.
I love all the teams, and may the best one win, or whatever it was. Yeah.
And this is going to conclude the Major League season for several months. So doesn't mean we're going to stop talking about baseball on the show or baseball groundskeeping. However, I will say that the next show we've got coming up will be all football with our gridiron guru, Ross Kirkcab.
Football!
So make sure you tune back in for that.
Absolutely.
And, with that, we're going to call this show In the Books. Be sure to tune in next time to the Diamond Da Vinci's for more talk about ball field groundskeeping. And the best part is it's all free because who else is going to be able to get a hold of the World Series grounds crew guys but us, huh?
Right.
Not that I'm tooting my own horn, but hey.
Hey, you got some connections.
We pulled it off.
Our official webpage for the show can be found at beaconathletics.com/podcast. There you'll find our show notes, which will include any papers or links or photos that we discussed during an episode. If you're new to the program, we also have our pictures and bios up there if you're curious about who we're listening to. If you're old to the program, you can still go look at us. We're kind of cute. And we also will put some bonus material up from time to time.
We'd love to hear from you. So if you will, you can send an email to Teresa and I at podcast@beaconathletics.com. There you can send us your questions or comments on our show, good or bad. If you got show ideas, send them along. We listen to every one of them, and we look to schedule stuff in that people send suggestions on, and we've gotten quite a few of them. The other thing is, if you listen to us on iTunes, please, 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 please give us a review on iTunes. The more reviews we get, the better off we are, and the more people will see us. So please give us a review on iTunes.
And if by chance you're on Twitter, we are on there as well. We're not crazy active there, but we do share some links now and again. And we are at Diamond Da Vinci's. That's at Diamond DAVINCIS. And sometimes we put stuff up about what we've done, or we put stuff up about what we're going to be doing. So it's kind of fun to follow us there.
The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics, for over 67 years providing solutions for sports field managers. And with that said, I am out of here.
Adios, folks.